As the silent seconds dance in their eternity about me and set aflame again the fire to inspire my nimble fingers to procure the pen and awaken it in a resurrection, transforming the ink to the blood of the writer. As once again he bleeds his acquired wisdom like a light into the world.
Good morning, Vietnam. Actually, where the heck
are we?
I've always wanted to say that, and I can't hear myself in my own headset.
Well, now you've said
there
it.
There we go. That's better. But since Vietnam probably doesn't pick up WCOM, let's keep it local, and that would be Carborough and the Big Chill. Good morning to you folks.
Good morning, Viet Carborough.
Yes, indeed. Who knows what we're turning into. We've got an old friend back in the studio here, an actor, director, independent film producer, John Demers. We're going to be picking his brain, and God knows where that's going to go. No particular direction has been announced. I think he just had a toe operation, poor fella.
Oh,
he
well.
Came limping in this morning.
Ouch.
I did. An ingrown toenail was removed last night.
Ouch. That's a way to start the morning.
I've had that done on both feet.
Do you know you drive with your feet, you know that?
Yes, you drive with your feet.
And walk and so forth.
And you're suddenly feeling it all.
Yes.
You also feel your way a lot with your feet.
I'm glad I'm not a toe ballerina right now.
Have a little toenail conversation for your morning coffee folks out there. Just want to acknowledge some folks that are supporting the Speakeasy and WCOM at this point, the Carolina Theater being a big one. I want to give my thanks to them. Also, recently just started writing an article for the Highlander 2, a regular column on a monthly basis, which is from my own little hometown in Broadway, North Carolina. Not originally where I'm from, but where I live now. And I'd like to thank the Broadway's own Lady of Letters, Miss Doris White, who drew me in for the project, and it's fun to be a part of. The monthly column is called Claudio's Quill, kind of like the Speakeasy, the literary and all else, so it can go in many directions, and just finished the first one for that. It's called The Highlander 2, Broadway's own little literary tablet. As far as the Carolina Theater goes, they've got all kinds of talent, including Woody Guthrie coming back around. And they're showing...
I believe that's Arlo.
Woody Guthrie. What did
Arlo
I say? Boy,
Guthrie.
Am I getting ahead.
Woody's sadly passed from
I think
us a
Woody's
long
in
time.
Vietnam.
Woody's
probably
in wood.
Yeah. Woody's...
Sorry, Woody. Woody's, hello, Arlo.
Ouch. He's horizontal and wrapped in wood.
Boy. Okay. He's probably singing a ballad somewhere. Who knows? And the Carolina
singing,
Theater.
I'm leaving.
he's singing for Jesus.
He needs to go sing at the White House. See, we can scare out of there. Just a quick note on the movies that are playing at the Carolina Theater in Durham, the historic Carolina Theater. Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, also Priceless, which is a new French romantic comedy, and The Fall from India, that's playing there. And, of course, I think that they're shutting down a bit for the summer to do some renovations, but the cinema, as far as I know, is remaining open, and I think events will go back to normal come August. Somewhere around that time.
I'm not going to let you leave the Carolina Theater yet. Isn't it always sort of under renovation?
It's an old place.
Since the mid-early 1970s, and it's been
it happens a lot over there.
I mean, that's a good thing, because somebody's always talking about it being fixed.
Well, the city's taking some responsibility, I think, at this point. And then it really, they just had a wonderful lighting system installed. As a matter of fact, top Broadway quality, tops the one at Memorial.
It is. That is a beautiful theater.
And now they're performed there. Now they're going to do the audio system, right?
Yes, that's one of the things they're working on, yeah.
Which, that'll be cool.
And the little details that slip in between the cracks.
People like Claudio and I don't need sound systems because when we're on a stage, we are heard.
We project.
Project.
What did you do there?
I did, I think I either did Christmas Pageant or I did, this is embarrassing. I don't remember.
Put him on the spot.
The little Jewish girl that during World
oh,
War
oh,
II.
Oh, yeah. What's the Diary of Anne Frank?
Yeah, I was going to say Helen Keller, but it's not. That's the Diary of Anne Frank. As a matter of fact, it was the Diary of Anne Frank.
Yeah, I remember that being there, actually, yeah.
Yes, we did. We did that, good. So that was a lot of fun.
I had the good fortune of performing there with the North Carolina Symphony and going mad on stage by doing Stravinsky's Soldier's Tale, Histoire du Soldat, where I got to do five different voices arguing and fighting with each other occasionally. I got to be a lunatic on stage, and the audience loved it.
So what is not different about that?
Yeah, and you call that acting?
They didn't know?
They thought
I was good.
You are good. You are good. You're good in many, many arts.
Thank you.
More than just one art form there for our good friend, Chef. We'll talk about that later.
As is the case with the one who speaks. So anyway, the guy's got his hands in all kinds of cauldrons, and he's stirring a few. I want to mention very quickly that the WCOM Brewery Benefit and DJ Get-Together, which will be on June 22nd, is going to be happening at the Carolina Brewery, of course. Eat, drink, and be merry at the Carolina Brewery with WCOM on Sunday, June 22nd. John Paul and I will try to be there. I hope I can keep my word on that. WCOM and the brewery are hosting a DJ get-together and benefit. This is your chance to get to know the WCOM DJs, if you really want to see our mugs, and talk show hosts off the air. What?
Off the air.
Did I just read that?
Off the air.
And talk to show hosts off the air, I guess.
Yes.
Maybe they want to talk us into getting off the air.
Yeah, I think that may be it, yes.
That was a good faux pas on my part.
Could be the deal.
This is the Morning Comedy Hour. WCOM will be there from 5 to 7 p.m.
I thought this was hard news.
It's pretty hard.
Yeah. Carolina Brewery
it's tough.
Will generously donate a portion of every meal ticket when you tell them you're there for WCOM. Join us at the brewery to help WCOM bring you the best in music, talk, news, and more. Invite your friends and support your all-volunteer community radio station by enjoying great food and beverage at the brewery on June 22nd. Remember to tell them you're there for WCOM. We hope to see you there, and thank you for your support.
A great cause.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's hard for the listeners, mostly.
Anything at the brewery that you drink is for a great cause.
Yeah. Oh, by the way,
And please support the great causes by refilling our mugs.
I just had a great idea.
Yes.
Let's go crazy. Let's take phone calls this morning.
Not this morning. No. We got John on. I promised John.
Phone calls are lovely.
He loves phone calls.
I'll dial in. I'll be the first call to you guys.
We'll see.
I have myself, my
BlackBerry.
John
dial in.
The crackberry here.
Well, anyway, one of the reasons I invited John DeMers to come back on, first of all, his Cabin in the Woods studios. Have I got that right?
Studio in the Woods.
Studio in the Woods in the cabin or somewhere.
Well, somewhere. Like a cabin in the woods.
Every studio in the woods is becoming
has to be somewhere.
It does.
Would you let me get a word in edgewise? I didn't bring my wedges.
Bend over.
His name's Ben. What was that? He's getting a phone call there already. I invited him back because his company is becoming a sponsor of the Speakeasy.
We are.
An underwriter, which I'm very pleased and very proud of. Thank you.
Studio in the Woods is proud to become the next underwriter for the Speakeasy.
Thank you very much.
Yes. And you're joining good company from the Carolina Theater.
We'd like to thank.
Absolutely.
And a few more in the wings.
We have a couple
Absolutely.
Other working. Yep.
No, this is what, like, local community stuff is all about.
Hey, indeed.
Actually exercising the freedom of speech and not being subdued by all those outer concerns.
Yes, we're exercising it and practicing it, and eventually we hope to get it right.
Yes, exactly.
We will.
One of these days. And, by the way, how's Go Fish going? A film that John is in process of producing as well as acting in.
We are. Well, I don't know for sure that I'm acting in it yet. We're still waiting for
You were acting
script.
In the read-through.
We were acting in the read-through. I certainly was. I was doing the part of Sinji.
Yeah, I thought you came across pretty well with that.
Yeah, everyone liked the accent and just the effort that I made, so that was kind of cool.
You look like a Chinaman.
Sinji, yeah. Yeah.
Give me a little of that. Well, now, why you want me to talk like that to you?
I think he's got it.
He make a fun a way I speak. No, nice man. No, John. Nice man.
We like your buffets. Thank you.
General Chow. General Chow. Chicken.
Yeah. Chicken. So how's that coming anyway? What's going on there?
Actually, it is, you know, every film has its own weird life. And with Go Fish... we have one there as well. It's a wonderful story. You may remember the executive producers were in here one time before, Goro Hamasaki and his wife, Victoria.
Yes.
And wonderful story. We've had several different screenplay adaptations written from it, but none of them have won the hearts of the producers, quite frankly. And there's a real reason for that. I mean, I don't mind saying it. Putting Go Fish together... The whole idea for that project is that we will distribute in the U.S. through our own structured
self-distribution outlets that we're going to create or partner with.
And it is also a North Carolina film project.
We're going to shoot it in North Carolina. Our locations are in Apex, New Hill, Jordan Lake at the moment. We may add a location, but those are beautiful places. Yeah, and the town of Apex has been great to work with. Wonderful, wonderful community. And so we've got that, New Hill and Jordan Lake, and the folks out with the Park Service that run Jordan Lake, from the superintendent right on down, they've all been great to work with as well. So we like the locations. We can tell our story here because Go Fish is about a couple of grandfathers and a couple of grandkids, and it's sort of a coming-of-age story, and we use bass fishing as our backstory to the show. But we haven't had a script that really came in and satisfied the needs of our sponsors, of the folks that we want to partner with in distribution. And it isn't about that we are just trying to make a business decision. We're trying to couple the creative decision with finding new ways to distribute that avoids the middleman. Prime example of that is Walmart, for instance. If you want to get a DVD or a CD in Walmart, there are only two companies in the country that get those in there, and one's east of the Mississippi and one is west, and you're going to pay $1 per CD and DVD just to put it on their shelf. That's their advertising that the distributor says. Yet there's another way to get in to Walmart through specialty departments like sports departments, et cetera. If they can see where they can make a profit selling something, they will. If you go into those departments now, you're finding a lot of the how to go fishing, how to go camping. You're seeing that stuff already. And so we're going to just add an entertainment component to that and create a better cash flow for the production company in the distribution side of the transaction and increase the per dollar per unit for the stores. And not just Walmart. I mean, the truth is, if you think about it, there are more independent bait and tackle stores out there than there are Walmarts. And that's really where we're going with it as well. So, I mean, our whole idea is to self-distribute in the U.S. and then allow it to have a more traditional distribution model overseas. But we're going to do it here, and we're going to do it in North Carolina. We're going to have a lot of fun with it. And, yeah, I'm delighted Studio in the Woods, one of your new sponsors, is involved with it. And we appreciate Goro and the folks from L.A. coming out here to work here.
Good. So presently it's basically – it sounds like it's a little on hold right now, just waiting for the script.
The script went to another writer. This writer happens to be out of state who has done a number of children's programs, children's movies. And we're hoping in about 3.5 to 4 weeks to get a copy back that we can sign off on. And then basically once we get a script we like, it's about 9 weeks and counting. Now, that means we have 6 to 7 weeks to get a script and get it shot this year. Otherwise, we shoot in the spring and we bring another movie up in the winter to shoot. Have a script.
Which one is that?
That's a Christmas movie that I really actually can't even discuss yet until Simon gets back. Simon's back late tonight and meeting tomorrow.
Where's he now? Back in California?
He went back to take care of some family business that needed to be addressed.
Gotcha. Well, so, I enjoyed the read-through last time. There are some things I was sort of anxious to talk to you about after hearing it all.
Uh-huh.
And you know, if an occasion comes up where you and I can get together and talk, I've got some ideas I'd love to put on the table for that particular story.
This is a good time because we have a conference call with our writer on Thursday.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So
because I liked a lot of where the story wanted to go, but that it seemed like it I could tell that it wasn't fully gestated yet.
No. It's a good story idea. It just needs to be fleshed out further with just a little more oomph, and we got to get some of our celebrity fishermen in the story.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it's about. That's what's going on. One of the other things I'll share with you is that the Hamasakis are looking at forming a development company to do several projects, not just one.
Film-related?
All film-related. There might be some staged musical play stuff done, but the whole idea is to do more than just go fish.
Okay.
And so that's kind of appealing, and during this time that we're waiting for a script, that's kind of what we're going to be working on, is getting that pulled together and organized.
Is it going to be North Carolina based?
Yep. And we're going to go raise the funds for it primarily here. He'll get some money from out of state, but primarily we're going to raise it here.
Make
it all local. And the reason for that is so that we can have our own product made here for the festivals that are in North Carolina.
Which are quite plentiful, yeah.
Right, and we've got festival coming up.
The Carborough Film Festival, indeed.
The Carborough Film.
Speaking of that, I've got to bounce over to the Century Center quickly. Kim Andrews, and wanted me to remind everyone that we're going to have the West End Poets Weekend coming up again in October. I've been asked to exhibit my art. We'll see where that goes with the judges. I did exhibit it last time when I put on Seafarers when John Paul and I performed there. And look forward to doing that again. But just want to remind you folks that the Century Center is putting on the West End Poets Weekend, and that's in October. I can't remember the exact date on that. Just look for that happening. I think it's early October.
Somewhere between 1 and 31.
There we go.
Yeah, somewhere in that range.
Yeah. Yes. Anyway, just want to make sure that I plug that. Now, what else am I supposed to
specificity
plug?
Specificity is what I'm all about.
What else am I supposed to plug? We spoke about that this morning. You remember, John?
I don't know. I'm having the same brain fart you are. So.
Well, maybe that's what we should plug.
Yeah.
Yeah, please plug it.
Plug that.
Yeah, right. Da-boom.
So let's bounce over then to the unmedia content of the morning, because I'm going to connect with John Demers on some John Fitzgerald Kennedy information that I think the public may be less aware of, and about which we will also eventually have Ira David Wood III on, who's a bit of an expert in that department.
I was so thrilled to learn that information. You know, I've known him since 1972.
That's one of his passions. Matter of fact, even when I interviewed him on Christmas Carol, we bounced into the Kennedy assassination. Don't ask me how.
Oh, well,
it went all over the place.
If someone has an interest in that, they'll find a way to get it in there, because it's we never got the truthful answers from the government.
And it certainly reflects much of what has been going on in this government consistently for many decades.
Too long.
Yeah, way too long. But anyway, bouncing back to John Paul with the unmedia content, who basically exposes our current conspiracies.
And by uncorked.
The way, I don't know if I've mentioned this yet. This is Claudio's Speakeasy, the literary and all else, in case I'm bouncing ahead of myself today.
Is that where we are, Claudio's Speakeasy?
Yes, I'm trying to bring us back down to the pub level.
I was wondering where I woke up this morning.
Yes.
Oh, you do?
Oh, you do.
It was you behind the bottles, was it?
Also.
Well, anyway, so what is our unmedia content this morning?
Well, the unmedia is really unraveling. The major media has systematically and deliberately suppressed some incredible news.
Oh, yes, I'm
incredible.
Quite aware of that.
And more than one, I mean, in the last week or so, we're talking about 3, 4, 5 incredibly important stories that they are absolutely deliberately suppressing. You don't hear a word about it on the mainstream news.
Actually, I did hear something, but it was very brief. It may have been on PBS to that effect.
I think PBS did a very, very brief mention of it. It was almost like in passing. Mm-hmm. And it took less than 20 seconds.
I'll let you reveal what we're talking about.
The most important one is the Dennis Kucinich impeachment resolution on George W. Bush. John, did you know that?
I had heard one blurb. Apparently, John hasn't heard it.
No.
Yesterday, I heard it just by chance.
If you watch the mainstream media, you would never know this had happened. Dennis Kucinich filed 35 articles of impeachment on George W. Bush last week.
There's likely more.
On the House floor. During the day, he announced that he was going to do it, and at night, he spent 4 hours reading the indictments in absolute word for word, every word of the indictments. 35 impeachment articles.
None of this was conveyed on the public media.
Not one bit of it was on any of the mainstream
media. I even watched C-SPAN fairly regularly, and
well,
I didn't catch
C-SPAN.
It.
Well, it was on C-SPAN.
Well, but I also have to admit that you have to watch it at certain times if you're going to catch it. But, I mean,
Right. Sometimes
they'll play tapes saying, oh, we're going to be revisiting so-and-so's speech on the floor or such.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall them bringing up notes saying...
I don't believe they did replay these. Not even his short statement during the day on the House floor.
So you're saying they played them once?
They played it live. They play everything on the floor live.
Yeah. Right.
So the live proceedings, they can't suppress those because it's part of their charter.
Right.
But they did not cover it at all. No agency covered it at all. Only the new progressive talk radio shows covered it.
They picked it up,
And they talked a lot about
it. Probably Democracy Now! As well.
Democracy Now! Covered it. They had Dennis Kucinich on the show. So that's probably the largest outlet that had any information about it at all. And the information is wholly damning. I mean, every article is backed up with solid information that is actually in the public domain, even though it's suppressed in the general media. You can still find it. It's out there.
I did notice that when Bush first took office, he cut off a whole lot of access to the public domain stuff that was coming out at the time, things that he wanted to seal up for another 10 years or more. Yeah. I don't know how much he got away with on that, but I know that happened.
Well, where does this stand then? I mean,
they had a House vote on what to do with it. They referred it again to John Conyers' Judiciary Committee, where he's been sitting on the Cheney impeachment resolution for months. And Robert Wexler immediately came out in support of the Kucinich resolution. And he's gotten, I think, a few sponsors since they introduced the bill. But it's being tied up in committee again. And people are supposed to be contacting their congressman and contacting Conyers to tell them, he and them, that they want hearings immediately. Now, there is one possible little breakthrough that's coming up, and that is the McClellan book. The Scott McClellan, the former press secretary, he got a little bit of attention, very tiny amount of attention on the national media, but not very much at all. And he got poo-pooed like crazy, of course.
Oh, yeah, he's persona non grata in the Bush White House now.
Yes,
yeah,
sure. He's very persona.
But he's probably joining a rather nice club.
I would say so, yeah. Right.
Well, his book is selling big time.
No rocking chair on any porch with George Bush.
It's on the top 10 list already.
Yeah.
So he is doing pretty well with that book. He's going to be testifying on Friday before the Judiciary Committee in the House.
Oh.
So they're going to go through all the information that he has at that time and try to cull out what.
Interesting to see him suddenly getting a conscience, because I really didn't care much for him when he was in.
Well, I think it's very interesting that he's done this. I know his father. I've corresponded quite a bit with his father, Barr McClellan, who wrote a book about LBJ's participation in the Kennedy assassination. And so we've been emailing back and forth for a number of years. And just a little sidelight, there came a point about 3 months before McClellan resigned. And by the way, my last name is McClellan.
Yes, you may leave now.
You're not getting any more Christmas cards from the White House either. How about that?
I don't think I am. No. Although I've sent them some.
Bet you have.
Yes. Did you send naked pictures of yourself?
Yes, and now they liked those. But
no, the little terrier liked those.
The little terrier loved them. Well, George likes those kind of things a lot.
Uh-huh.
You know, he and Jeff Gannon, I'm sure, had a lot of fun looking through those pictures.
Okay, back to your story, please.
Okay, back to our story.
We're a little off tilt at the speakeasy today,
John's
folks.
Cracking up. Okay, I had been corresponding with Barr about matters concerning the Kennedy assassination and blah, blah, you know, just batting it back and forth. And, excuse me, at one point I wrote him an email. I said, you know, Barr, I have information that leads me to believe that Scott is going to resign from his position. And he wrote me a note back saying, I don't know anything about that. I haven't heard that he's going to do that. Where did you get your information? Well, I didn't answer him where I got my information. But I did tell him, yeah, I'm pretty sure he's going to resign. And he ought to before the you-know-what hits the fan.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, like 2-3 weeks later, he resigned. He announced his resignation, and then a couple of months later, he was gone. Hmm. Which I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, didn't realize you were a prophet,
and
did you?
And I also told him, I said, look, Barr, I think you should tell Scott that what he needs to do is come clean. He needs to tell the world what really has been going on in the White House. This was 6-8 months. How long ago did he resign? I lose track of time.
I think that's about the time frame.
It's maybe longer than that.
It may be a little longer, but not by much.
It was way last year. Mm-hmm.
I think he left with enough time to be able to hit that 1 year period where you can then start lobbying.
Yeah.
While your people are still there.
Yeah,
and
he's not lobbying.
Oh, obviously.
Lobbying his book, thank you very much.
Not for the administration.
Yeah, that's right. He's on a different Christmas list now.
Yes,
he's lobbying stones.
It's a completely different list. So anyway, I thought that was all very interesting. Mm-hmm. And, of course, his information really supports the other information that we already know about Bush lying about whether there were weapons of mass destruction, the completely fabricated stuff about the nuclear yellow uranium, the stuff about connections between Saddam and Al-Qaeda, which were totally bogus. I mean, all of that stuff was just a total fabrication, and I knew it in 2002. I mean, I knew it in 2001.
The biggest surprise to me about all of this is that he's still in the White House. That's what blows my mind.
You know, some of the stupidest stuff they said from the White House was stuff like, well, they've got Al-Qaeda training camps in the northern part of Iraq. Well, that's the no-fly zone, you morons. If they've got training camps in the northern part of Iraq, then we're the ones who are allowing them to be there. Right, the Israelis can't even operate in the northern part of Iraq. But the American public was too stupid to see that that's what was happening. It just, God, that ticks me off. And it continues to happen. The Iran situation. There's no sense at all to this Iran situation. El Baradei has just come out again and said, we have no evidence that Iran is doing nuclear weapons.
Yeah, he's trying
None.
To sell the same ticket.
We have no evidence that they have nuclear weapons or are even trying to do nuclear
weapons.
This
White House just seems to like chaos.
Well, they do because they benefit.
Oh, amazing what you can get done when there's chaos going on.
I'm sure.
It's money for the military-industrial complex.
Fear-mongering.
Chaos
Hello,
works.
George Orwell.
Chaos
Everybody's slicing off their share.
For the military, that's right. They can keep building armaments and charging the U.S. huge amounts of money for
it. Isn't that what Truman warned us against?
That's what it's about. Okay, on to another subject.
Yes, please.
The Canadian Parliament. There's a member, the deputy House leader of the New Democratic Party, Libby Davies, delivered a parliamentary petition signed by over 500 Canadians demanding a new 9/11 investigation in Canada's House of Commons. During the routine proceeding on June 10th, he says that scientific and eyewitness evidence show that the 9/11 Commission report is a fraudulent document and that those behind the report are consciously or unconsciously guilty of covering up what happened on 9/11-2001. This evidence overwhelmingly supports the conclusion. Now listen to this. This evidence overwhelmingly supports the conclusion that World Trade Center Towers 1, 2, and 7 were brought down by demolition explosives, and that the official theory of towers collapsing from the airplanes and the ensuing fires is irrefutably false. We further believe that elements within the U.S. government were complicit in the murder of thousands of people on 9/11-2001. And now, John knows what it feels like because he just got blasted on his earphone. Okay, because he was trying to look at the cop outside who's pulled somebody over.
Pulled somebody right in our driveway.
Right in our driveway.
Interesting. I thought they were coming for us, frankly.
No, apparently he didn't like some maneuver they did.
Yeah.
But anyway, he should do an official report.
There we go.
All right. Now, on 9/11, okay.
This is the morning of deception.
I was rubbernecking and I crashed my ear.
I crashed your ear into the microphone. That crunch everybody heard, that was John's ear colliding with the microphone.
Teach you not to take that rubber off.
that's what I should have
okay,
never
so
done.
Okay, so now let's think of how consequential this is, that in the Canadian Parliament, they have a group of parliamentarians who are saying that 9/11 was an inside job. And they believe the evidence is overwhelming to prove that the towers were brought down by controlled demolition. That is huge.
Man.
Not one word of this came in to the regular media in the U.S.
Still isn't.
Hence the name Unmedia.
Unmedia.
For
With
us.
John Paul McLellan.
We are the Unmedia.
Etc.
So
Man.
That's quite monumental. Okay, on to another subject. Vincent Bugliosi. Just published
the author of Helter Skelter, I believe.
Yeah, and the prosecutor of Charles Manson.
Mm-hmm. Helter Skelter, what was that
and
book?
I think he had a total of 9 very high-profile murder cases where he prevailed as a prosecutor.
Right.
He has now written a book on that's entitled The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder. He's been on a number of,
of
radio programs. They won't let him on the mainstream TV. Shows.
You mean I won't see him on Good Morning America
tomorrow? They won't let him talk
on NBC? Jeepers.
No. I'm so surprised.
Tim Russert won't have him on? I guess not.
Tim Russert's dead.
No, I understand.
He's wrapped in wood, too.
Yeah, he's down there with Woody.
ooh. Well, let's not be that insensitive.
Guthrie?
Well, I love Woody Guthrie. Believe me. I don't feel the same about Tim Russert. I mean, everybody's making such a huge fuss about Tim Russert. He was a right-wing tool. He was one of the biggest cheerleaders of the war in Iraq. He had all the information he needed to know that there were no weapons of mass destruction, that there was no nuclear program, that there was no connection between Hussein and 9/11, and no connection between Iraq and Al-Qaeda. Yet he failed every single time the subject came up to expose that information. He was a liar, a traitor to the country. I have no respect for him whatsoever, and I'll let people make up their own minds about what they think.
All kinds of views make the picture.
Everybody can say what they like. That's what I'm saying.
This is a free country. We have a democracy, so we're
told. That's right. We're a democracy. The only difference between...
Just peel the fascism off first, please.
Yeah. Try to get that... Underneath all that fascism, maybe there's some democracy.
Somewhere there's a democracy,
there might be some democracy.
I think it's right here on the speakeasy as
well,
we speak.
Well, the difference between my opinion and the mainstream media's opinion of Tim Russert is that I'm correct. Moving on.
So there, folks.
So there. You've now heard the definitive... definitive information.
John DeMers and I will put him in our trunk when the show's over.
In case anybody also didn't hear this in the mainstream media, Australia has decided to withdraw all their troops from Iraq.
Oh, I hadn't heard that either.
No, yes. I hadn't heard that.
They have definitely...
When
decided,
was this decision made?
This decision was made...
Nobody calls me.
Why didn't they... Well, they asked me first, but I didn't tell them to call you this time.
Is he actually reading all this off the Drudge Report? Is this what he's got over here?
Where are you getting this from? John Paul's on computer here. He's putting up a screen.
I'm going to have to look at the Drudge Report now.
I think it's the Sunday Funnies, personally.
I have never read the Drudge Report, not one time. Never.
Mm-hmm.
That's a piece
it's the Grudge Report.
It's a piece of crap.
I never saw Meet the Press after Eric Severide left.
I would never.
I sort of lost my taste for it.
Never have.
Well, so anyway, this announcement was made on June 6th.
This relates to Australia.
Wow. That would be news. That you'd think that would make real news.
Yeah, I have not heard about that at all. It's interesting. It's interesting how I find out the news when I come into my radio show here.
Yeah, well, that's why we call it the unmedia.
That's right.
So, and they, of course, they only have 550 troops there, but it's very symbolic.
Well, I think I was just going to say. I mean, this war was all about symbolism, wasn't it? I mean, so where's the symbolism?
So there you have a few little tidbits.
So any idea what made this decision come about? I mean, I thought they were pro-Bush.
Public pressure.
Public pressure.
Yeah,
good.
They elected a new...
Go public.
A new prime minister over there. And
good.
I
was expecting
he
the
ran
new,
on that platform.
I was expecting the new prime minister of England to make some moves against the Bush administration instead of becoming the next lollipop.
Yeah,
they seem to be buddy-buddy.
Boy, they are.
I know.
And he sold himself on a completely different ticket.
Yep, that is exactly right.
Yep, there you go.
So bouncing over to you, John.
Yes, sir.
You sent me an
surprising thing.
Well, we'll give you one more moment then.
One more thing. An article by...
Then you can go to your room and behave.
Thank you very much. When I was a kid, my parents used to send me to my room. And after I was in there for a while, if I wanted to get out, I'd have to say, I'm going to be nice.
And it scarred him.
So we would go in our bedroom and sit for a few minutes, and then we'd holler out through the door, I'm going to be nice.
Yeah, right.
Then my parents would let me come out.
Oh, boy.
Here it's different. I don't.
Well, I blame your parents then.
I don't promise to be nice anymore. I don't know if you've ever heard of this guy, John Pilger. He's a scholar who has done incredible.
Did you say Pilgrim or Pilger?
He's one of the guys that originally... Pilger, P-I-L-G-E-R. He's one of the guys that originally exposed all the lies and stuff about Vietnam. And he was the one who exposed the bombing of Cambodia and Laos in the world
the killing
press.
Fields.
Right. No, this is before the killing fields.
Oh, really? Okay.
This is during the U.S. bombing of Cambodia.
Air America.
Yeah. Yes, right.
Yeah, and he knew all about Air America.
So see, Good Morning Vietnam applies, folks.
Yes, and the heroin smuggling and all that. The United States was smuggling heroin throughout the world at that time. And had been, actually, since 1954 in the Golden Triangle.
But to anyone tuning in, just want to remind you folks that this is WCOM 103.5 FM. Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else. Just figured we'd plug that in case we have any newcomers.
That's right.
We have John Paul going at it with his unmedia content.
And the last thing is that Pilger has written an article about Barack Obama, and it's titled, Obama is a hawk. Okay? The two greatest obstacles to democracy in the United States are, first, the widespread delusion among the poor that we have a democracy, and second, the chronic terror among the rich, lest we get it.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So what has changed? The terror of the
and
rich...
we are going to get it.
Fear of riches greater than ever, ouch. And the poor have passed on the delusions to those who believe that George W. Bush, when he finally steps down, will end the numerous threats to the rest of humanity. Ain't going to happen. The foregone nomination of Obama, which according to the breathless commentator marks a truly exciting and historic moment in U.S. history, is a product of a new delusion. Actually, it just seems new. Truly exciting and historical moments have been fabricated around U.S. presidential campaigns for as long as I can recall, says Pilger, generating what can only be described as BS. I'm not going to say the actual words. On a grand scale, race, gender, appearance, body language, rictal spouses, offspring, even bursts of tragic grandeur are all subsumed by marketing and image making, now magnified by virtual technology. Thanks to undemocratic electoral college system, or in Bush's case, tampered voting machines, only those who both control and obey the system can win. This has been the case since the historic, since the truly historic and exciting victory of Truman. Now, here's the essence of what he is saying about Obama. Let's see. Excuse me.
No rehearsing on this microphone.
Here it was. Okay.
That was funny.
The day after.
That was funny.
It was funny, yeah. I can do that again if you like.
No.
That's one that the repeat doesn't work.
Here's the information. The crux of the information is this. The day after Obama announced that he had enough delegates to win the Democratic nomination, he went before AIPAC. The American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, which is the strongest lobbying organization for Israel in the world. In that address, he talked about two very specific things. One, he used the term undivided Jerusalem. Okay?
I did hear that.
Meaning that he was promoting the idea that all of Jerusalem would become the capital of Israel, okay? But that is actually not the law. The United States is signatory to the UN Charter, and we have approved the resolutions both that invented Israel and that sustains Israel. And in those documents, it says that Jerusalem is an international city. Every country in the world accepts this. The United States policy is that Jerusalem is an international city. The reason for that is that in the original documents in 1947 that admitted Israel, it was said that East Jerusalem would be the capital of Palestine. There would be two states, Israel and Palestine, and that East Jerusalem would be the capital of Palestine. So if you say that we're going to have an undivided Israel, undivided Jerusalem, in front of the AIPAC guys, then you're saying that we are going to change U.S. policy and we're going to defy the Constitution of the United States. Because the Constitution of the United States says that when you sign a treaty, it becomes U.S. law. So Barack Obama is saying he's going to allow the Israelis to continue to murder thousands of people in Palestine from now on until they've committed complete genocide.
One of the reasons we have terrorism all over the world.
Which they've been doing for a very, very long time. No other country in the world refers to an undivided Jerusalem. Not one other country, not one leader, not one politician in a position of authority to do so has ever said that they support an undivided Jerusalem. So you now have a presidential candidate for the Democrats.
I got nobody to vote for now.
I don't have anybody to vote for.
Certainly not McCain, God knows.
Well, I'm not saying, you know, people call me on the carpet for talking about this stuff. It's the truth. It's what you have to face. You've got to face the truth. You've got somebody running who is an outlaw.
Well, you've got a corrupt system overall, so anything you get is going to be part of that same swim hole.
Right. Now, here's another thing he said, and listen to this.
Well, let's...
All right. He said the United States has lost Latin America. He described the democratically elected governments in Venezuela, Bolivia, and Nicaragua as a vacuum to be filled. He raised the nonsense of Iranian influence in Latin America, and he endorsed Colombia's right to strike terrorists who seek safe havens across its border.
Translated, this means the right of a regime whose president and leading politicians are linked to death squads to invade its neighbors on behalf of Washington. Colombia is our surrogate. We are trying to dominate South America through Colombia, through the war on drugs. The war on drugs has nothing to do with drugs.
No, it doesn't.
It's got everything to do with U.S. hegemony.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening down there, and Barack Obama is supporting that. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen.
Enough said. Something to ponder.
The un-news.
The un-media.
The un-media news.
The un-media with John Paul.
Things they don't want you to know, but things that George Orwell warned us about.
But everybody, both people who are listening to this radio broadcast now know this information.
Indeed.
Well, I'm listening because I have the headphones on. So
that's what I mean. That's what I mean, you and Claudio.
I'm listening because I can't run out of the room. The door's locked. So bouncing over into what's going to probably spill into more of the unmedia flavor here, since you're a bit of a studied person on the Kennedy assassination, I was really surprised at the clip you sent me, which I was not aware of, and I think probably to a great extent the American public or public worldwide is not that aware of, and that was that one of the security guards for Kennedy...
The stand down orders that were issued by the lead agent.
Waved off the bumper?
Yeah. What's going on there is another... example of the tragedy of the event and the reality that the new media and how we learn things, it really gets out there. This clip that you saw, YouTube, MySpace, I'm not exactly sure which address I sent you to, but and again, that was forwarded to me by another gentleman.
I couldn't pull it up, so please feel free to describe it.
Well, what's happening when you pull this John F. Kennedy clip up of the Secret Service agent that is standing down from the president's limousine.
Which is something that, first of all, is never permitted, right?
Well, I'll get into how the rules have changed a little bit since Kennedy's assassination. But what happened was, Jacqueline Kennedy and John Kennedy had gotten off of Air Force One. They were to have a brief amount of time in Dallas. They were going to go on to Lyndon Johnson's for a barbecue dinner, I think, or a barbecue of some type, for Texas-style barbecue at his ranch, where, by the way, side note, Dr. Pepper, founded in Texas, had special bottles made for the day.
Oh, really?
Which are very collectible.
Interesting.
And I've got one. Back on track. When they got off Air Force One, they did the very typical thing in the campaign season, and John Kennedy worked the crowd at the at Love Field at the airport in Dallas. And as he works the crowd, there's one team of agents who, at that time, would work the crowd with the president and Jacqueline, and they'd go along. The other team would assemble the motorcade. They'd bring the car around a presidential detail. The three security officers, the three Secret Service agents, form a diamond pattern, or it can be a four diamond. There can be four Secret Service agents.
Okay.
And that's how they do it today. At that time, he had two assigned to him. There were two that were working the rope, as you will, when he was shaking hands, and then the agents that were, again, lining up the car. Kennedy was ushered over to the cars, the limousines, to get in the limousines to start the motorcade into town. It was typical for the agents assigned to the president to then join him by getting on the back of the car. Specially designed bumpers existed then, as today, for them to be able to ride on it safely at a good speed.
With handrails on the truck.
That's right. In this particular case, and what you're able to find on the YouTube, is someone shot film that day. You know, we in those days you had little... I guess 8mm black and white cameras or color cameras.
Yeah, exactly.
And you'd shoot. I mean, that's how we know.
16mm, I think, as well. Yeah.
About the
event. No, it was 8mm.
Was it?
I think on this particular footage that's shot of this event at Love Field, I believe it's 8mm.
Is that the Zapruder film?
No, this isn't Zapruder.
No, this is independent.
This is a black and white film, that was shot by someone that was in the crowd. And what you see is once Kennedy's on board, the limousines begin to move maybe 6 inches, 7 inches, a very short period of time, and it's clear that the car behind the limousine, the chase car, which has the agents in charge for that day, there's a little different structure to how that works today in a motorcade, but he stands up and clearly gives an order to the agents on John Kennedy's car to stand down, to get off the car. And you see the agent turn, and with his hands out, just gesture as though,
what the heck are
you talking about?
Yeah.
I'm supposed to ride with President Kennedy. I'm his protectee. And his boss says, obviously, no. And the guy just slams his hands down to his side like, what the heck is going on here today? And just shuffles off. You can see as the chase car behind comes up aside this agent that the agent in charge offers to allow the agent to ride in his car. And the agent clearly is like, no, that's pointless. I'm supposed to be in the president's car.
Sure, absolutely.
I'm of no value here. And he stays at Love Field. So, and that happens for both the agents that were on the car.
Both of them.
So they're both standing down. You can clearly see the one's reaction. I mean, it's you don't need sound to look at it.
Yeah, I can imagine the pantomime,
see. And so the cars then go off. We know later how history clearly shows there was nobody on that car.
Right.
Agents ran from the chase vehicle up to keep Mrs. Kennedy from falling out the back when it started to peel away.
Right. There was nobody there.
That's
right.
Shown in the Zapruder film.
Well, where can the public access this particular film?
YouTube. It was YouTube.
It's on YouTube.
Under Kennedy assassination.
You can look up Kennedy assassination and then search for the Secret Service agent standing down, and that's actually how I
waved
found
off.
It.
And
we're obviously talking
inside job here, folks.
Yeah.
You can't watch that and say anything in your mind other than
what
somebody's been told to stop a process that you just never changed. Now, here's some interesting information. At the time that the agent was forced to stand down, he had to obey orders.
Because it was given by the high command.
It was given by the agent of the day, the person in charge. And there are names for all these people, and I kind of, I guess I could have brought a neat little folder and kind of gone through that, but we were just going to touch on some of this lightly, and we can get into it again.
Absolutely.
Once we get David Wood back in here, we could have a whole lot of fun.
Absolutely,
And so, but as you watch this process evolve, and you see the agents stand there and stay, you kind of question yourself as to why would a person do it? Well, in those days, you did what the boss said.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Now, what people don't know, and it lends itself to the reality that we didn't get the truth about the Kennedy assassination. We got a cover-up. And that is, an agent assigned to the president now in the 3 or 4 diamond pattern for an event, an advance. Once they're assigned, there is nobody that can pull them off.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Nobody.
Not even the president?
No.
Interesting.
Nobody.
So who delegates this then?
Once you have your final
authority in this?
There isn't. Once you have your assignment, you know, and that might, there's a routine team that is assigned to a president that works him on a regular basis, anywhere from probably 12 to 15 men in a rotation that will go, and depending on where he's going, that'll be beefed up or less. If he's at Camp David or if he's at the White House, that might be a one-person member of that team. If he leaves, it's probably going to be no less than 3, and it could be up to 4 or 5 that are in a diamond pattern, which is what it's described as. But since the Kennedy assassination, you once you have your assignment, unless you stand down because you say I'm sick or there's a reason that you stand down.
So you could say that the ultimate authority is the American people.
Exactly.
On this one.
No, I think that just means that if you're going to have the Secret Service involved in assassination, they have to assign the people before the actual event.
No, I understand.
To make the assassination work.
The fact that nobody, can disqualify it. Nobody can make them stand down. Yeah.
Well, and that's it. And it's an interesting, when you look at how the rules changed for protector and protectee, protectee being the president in this case, the protector being the Secret Service agents, and you see how training has worked since the Kennedy assassination, it's as though someone had a playbook and they went, okay, well, now to make sure that doesn't happen, we can't allow agents to be stood down by their supervisors. It was almost as though they saw the playbook for how they killed Kennedy so that folks knew how to keep it from happening again. And yet, here's where the conspiracy really hangs in truth for me. Whether you're the person who believes that the conspiracy was that it was an inside job, or whether the conspiracy was based on the foundation that there was a cover-up, which allows there to still be a conspiracy, which either way, mm-hmm. we were lied to.
Absolutely.
You know, in other words, you don't even have to get down to what you personally believe. The truth is, we were lied to, and there was a cover-up.
The truth is, the truth was not told, right?
Yeah, that's just it. And you can see it when you look at how the government operates now in protecting its presidents. It's clear that on the inside, people could effectively, in phone calls at the last minute, make things different because the power rested with the person in the office being mm-hmm. able to do that. And today, that can't happen. An assassination of a president today will be very difficult to do from the inside. It would really have to be an outside effort. And so, and the reason I say that is that just on how the rules changed for protecting.
Sure.
The authority really rests with the agents around the man. I mean, they can make the call to change how he moves, his route. I mean, that's the power that they have.
Yeah, exactly.
And that power used to be welded by someone who sat in another car behind.
Yeah.
And that guy didn't get away clean either. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of stuff.
The reason I wanted to bring this up at all today is because there's a sort of a common belief going around that Obama may meet a similar fate if he actually gets into power. Of course, I realize that the whole political thing is questionable at best, but there has been a public concern raised that, you know, is Obama in for the same kind of thing if he manages to get the position?
I think the Secret Service is a very well-trained organization, and I think they do a very good job. The truth is that this is a very unprecedented election cycle.
Yeah, isn't it?
You know, we're all seeing things we've not seen before, for the good, for the bad, but
all extremes.
Yeah, I mean, you would have not, you know, 6 months, 7 months ago, I firmly would have believed that Hillary Clinton would have been the Democratic nominee.
Yeah,
I just don't. Same here. Just like I would not have thought that McCain would have been the Republican nominee.
I know.
I mean, this is a real odd situation that we face. And I wish we had some other choices that we knew about. I know there are other choices.
Yeah,
I just don't think
them.
We ever really know about them.
Right.
You know, and so, but I think what the folks around Obama, and I'm not talking about the security folks now, need to always think about is where they are, where they're going, and who they want around him. I mean, the one benefit the country would have from an Obama presidency is he's fresh and he's new and he doesn't have as many people attached to him.
That's kind of my angle of seeing it, exactly.
You know, I know that wherever government is, there's going to be hacks in there that are going to run the machine and all that, but there's the fresh face of hope, I think, is that when you can go, well, I like the idea that he hasn't been there long. I like the idea that he doesn't know everybody on K Street in the mm-hmm. lobbying firms.
Same here.
I like the fact that he's raised a lot of money from $10 and $15 and $20 donations.
And he's created a bit of a youth movement as well, which is good.
Well, and I think there comes the Kennedy comparison.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. But you got to also remember that how Obama got started was with big corporate insider contributions.
But it was in Illinois.
No, it was national.
Yeah, but there was such a strong Illinois connection.
A lot of the Illinois people are national. The fact is that when he first started his campaign, he had no public support at all.
Yes, but he had one great supporter.
He had a lot of money that
he
was given to him.
He had a great supporter.
Who was that?
Gene Roddenberry.
Oh, that's
Star
true.
Trek
Gene Roddenberry, he was a good supporter.
Star Trek supporter? You guys don't know how Star Trek got Obama elected to the U.S. Senate? You haven't heard that story?
No, I thought it was the Twilight Zone.
You guys do the unnews.
You got 2 minutes to
tell
it. Here
it is. Okay, you all knew about the Star Trek series Voyager.
Yes.
Okay, so there's a huge franchise. Okay, well, you remember Seven of Nine.
Yes.
I love Seven of Nine. Voyager had its problems, but it wasn't Seven of Nine.
No. That's
right. Jerry Lynn Ryan,
yes,
yeah.
used to be married to.
Oh, that's right.
The Ooh, gentleman what? Who was running for the U.S. Senate, Mr. Ryan, in Illinois.
Yep.
And then a little clause from their divorce
decree.
Excuse me.
I don't have the cough button, but a little clause from their divorce decree got out that indicated that part of the reason that Jerry Lynn divorced her husband was of the sex clubs they were going to.
I remember that now that you mentioned it.
He was making her have sex with other people.
Right.
At sex clubs.
That's right.
Sex clubs.
And so, however it got out, she didn't deny it. He stepped out. Obama stepped in, and Star Trek put him in charge of the universe. So there you go. There's no, I mean, there's always little Star connection. Trek connects to everything.
So that was no virgin in a bodysuit.
No.
No, mercy.
Well, on that note, I think we're going to wrap the speakeasy here, bring it to a close, wind it down. Find our exit music. I think Touchstones is coming on next. Well, actually, I know Touchstones is coming on next.
Well, although we haven't
very
seen...
Very pleased to have John Demers here. And John, please give us your final out. Anything else you want to add on
well,
your own?
Well, I'm looking forward to the opportunity when you and I get a chance to do some cooking on the air, and I get to try my newest recipe with Chef Claudio's Tropical Moon.
Good.
It's with a great Ukrainian cold potato soup dish, and I can't wait to tell you.
Oh, lovely.
Good. Okay. And I'm looking forward to a partnership in the Tropical Moon endeavor.
There you go.
Well, we actually haven't seen Paul yet.
No, we haven't, which is quite surprising.
He's usually here by this time.
But that's okay. We can still exit.
Yeah, if he doesn't
well,
come
you know,
on.
I arrived there sort of at the last minute.
Came limping, favoring a toe.
Right on time.
So anyway, I want to thank you folks for joining Claudio Speakeasy, the literary and all else, with my co-host John Paul McClellan in the studio and John Demers of...
Studio in the Woods.
There we go. And thanks for joining us, folks. See you next week. Cheers.
Once again, a chill night wind blows its gales across the sea. As the sunset casts an inflamed and rippled hue across the waters. Vast distances of liquid motion stretch their infinity before me, and I have rarely felt so free. The sails are drawn for a night of rest. Where I go from here, the sea knows best. As the veils of night descend upon me, the moon emits its silvery canvas against a spectacle of aquatic celebration, as is only seen by night. The stars are scattered worlds of light against an opaque sky. And the nightfall is a constant whisper of the mysteries around me. Truly, all description would defy the beauty I choose herein to proclaim. Yet still, though encompassed by more wonder than many a man has e'er freed his soul to admire, my thoughts are adrift with a song of my heart. And the song of my heart with the voice of my soul. Adrift, adrift, adrift. Drifting ever back